Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And as always, I have a question for you. What do you think about retaliation? Is there a time and a place to get even? In today's podcast and post, we continue our study of the Sermon on the Mount and explore the impulse to retaliate. The ethos to retaliate is a vestigial residue from our pre-rational consciousness. It's a low-level impulse upon which we have built the world. What would happen if we just let go of retaliation in favor of something more? Join me now as we see beyond the impulse to retaliate and look closer at a far more powerful alternative. Hello, everybody, and thanks so much for coming back to yet another episode of Beyond Everything Radio. I am your host. My name is Kevin Winder. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach. And I'm so glad to have you with me. Welcome to the broadcast. Welcome to yet another day. So, folks, I know a lot of you are signing up. You're telling your friends. You're introducing them to the weekly newsletter that comes out. Some of you forward this to your friends. You get it in an email every Sunday morning, and in it is a link to this recording. Others of you are signed up on the podcast servers, and you downloaded Beyond Everything Radio, and so you get this every time it's published. So today that will be Friday. So happy Friday to you guys. And happy Sunday to everybody else. If you'd like to get on either one of those, please go and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast vendor. Or go to kevinwinder.com. Remember, I spell my name like the number 7, K-E-V-E-N, kevinwinder.com. Sign up for Winder's Windshield while you're there. Peruse all the free content that's there to help you, to build you up, to encourage you, to challenge you. And that's what we're here to do. I guess that's what I'm here to do. And we are in a series, folks. We've been going through the Sermon on the Mount, the most popular sermon in the world. And we've been trying to reframe it so that we can hear it again for the very first time. And let me tell you, that is bringing with it its own set of challenges. And today is no different. Today has the potential of really triggering you. Some of my audience is very triggered by political commentary. today, there's just no way to get around it. And so I want to invite you to get ready, strap on your floaties. We're going to the deep end, and get ready for podcast number 196, The Impulse to Retaliate. That's right, podcast number 196, The Impulse to Retaliate. And if you listen to this blog, if you read the blog, if you listen to this podcast at all for any serious amount of time, you'll know that I avoid political commentary. For the most part, I stay out of the political mud pit because everybody gets muddy, but only the pigs like it. You know, but today's text from the Sermon on the Mount requires us to examine our political landscape with its profound light. And I understand that most people hold allegiance to one side of the aisle. I know you might be a card-carrying Republican. You might be a card-carrying Democrat, and you're never going to change because you're the one who has the truth and the other team is all wrong, right? Oh, folks, we have to get beyond this binary. But I get that for so often, for so many of us, we are stuck in it, and it takes a long time to kind of pull our way out, to not be a victim of this myopia that towards our own team, which obscures the total voice of truth. And what do I mean by that? Am I saying that your team is wrong? Nope. I'm saying that both teams possess the truth and both teams lack the truth. And to access the wider voice of truth is going to require a field of view that goes beyond just whatever your team produces. But, you know, the situation may actually even be worse than that. I mean, our tribalism in politics is really just a byproduct of untransformed consciousness. It appears in everything from brand loyalty to patriotism. And I know when I say that word patriotism, that some people are immediately going to become very offended. And I risk saying what I'm about to say to you because of my love for you. My goal is to shock the system today, your system, your framework, your mindset. It's the cardia that we've been talking about here. You see, I desire to sound the alarm and wake up as many people as it will, in hopes that some people out there will hear this and become free. But I'm warning you now, it's not going to come easy. This is something that is really pressed into the deep recesses of our mind. And so if we want to possess the truth, which we all claim we have, we all think we subscribe to the truth, if we want to possess the truth, we have to be able to receive the truth, which is much wider than the truth we actually possess, because none of us possess all the truth. And so something wider always comes to us as though it was wrong. Do you realize that? That the first time you hear something truer than what you possess, it sounds wrong. And we have to replace it with the new thing, or else the old thing contaminates our life. Jesus put it this way in Mark 2:22, that the old wineskin cannot possess the new wine. It'll just blow it apart. So if the Bible has any authority in our life, and I recognize it in our modern world, the Bible doesn't have authority for most people. But if you are particularly a religious person, a faithful person, you define yourself as a person who subscribes to the authority of Scripture, then the words that are spoken in the passage we're going to look at today were put there to transform our anthropology, our view of humanity, which is ultimately our politics. If it doesn't do that, if these words don't contain the authority to transform the way we view others, then our faith is really just a byproduct, not of the authority of Scripture, but of our political institutions. Think about that. Our faith is really a propaganda machine on the heart. It is not transformation. Now, that's actually a dead faith. A dead, institutionalized religion has replaced, for most people, an authentic, the word there is perfect, as we will see later in this study, not today, but later in the coming weeks. But institutionalized religion has replaced authentic faith in believers of all traditions. So sadly, if most people are pressed to decide between the propaganda of their political party and the voice of God, most cannot discern the difference. That is so sobering to think about. They think that the voice of God is the voice of the political propaganda machine. That tells you that there's a deep anesthetization that has gone on within the heart of humanity. And this is the best I can do to shock you awake. Today, this gets as easy as it'll ever get. All you have to do is place your present political beliefs next to the teaching that I'm about to share and just examine any disparity. Look for any difference. Okay, this is me sticking the pads on your chest and telling everybody, clear, clear, I'm about to shock you awake. Ready? Patriotism is an expensive and glorified low consciousness tribal groupthink. I'm just going to let that sit in and let your anger bubble to the surface. Oh, I know you're identified, perhaps over-identified with the military, with patriotism, this country, the sacrifice of all the people who've died to give us the freedoms we have, and freedom for me to even say that. I know. Patriotism is an expensive and glorified low-consciousness tribal groupthink. Now, I know that sounds extreme, but hear me out. I love our country. I am truly grateful to be here. But you Have you ever noticed that each country offers its own distracting propaganda machine? And it kind of enslaves hundreds of millions of people into thinking that their country is intrinsically better than all others. Yes, I get it. Some countries are more intelligent and advanced. There are countries that still cannot produce a two-story building. They do not have mining capability. They do not understand clean water, sanitation, electricity. I get that. But over-identifying with one's country and one's culture is slavery masquerading as freedom. I'm not saying your culture is not important. Everybody's culture is beautiful and important and to be celebrated. However, over-identifying it with it is slavery masquerading as freedom. You see, behind all our pride, our ego, our bullying is a deep-seated fear of the other, or distrust of the other, of that which is different, that comparing mind, that judging mind, that critical discerning mind, that it gets locked in the intellect, has a good purpose in your life, but it turns toxic when we place it against others. Who's better? Who's stronger? Whose culture wins, right? It's always moving into this low tribal consciousness, pre-rational thinking, right? And what's happened is we've lost the memory that we too, especially as Americans, were once the other. Each country cherishes and values its prejudices within the heart. And in order to expunge it requires a sort of dying, an internal death, which is perceived as worse than death itself. It's an anesthetic that keeps us from seeing the other as ourself. Other equals enemy. And that tells us that we are at a very low consciousness tribal groupthink. Now, I know that doesn't sit well with a lot of people. I get it. You may be pushing back. You may be saying, Kev, you're really going off the label, the reservation here. How could you be making those assumptions against America? Look, I am going to ask you to look squarely into this teaching and evaluate yourself, just as I have had to do. Right? And if we have any soul left at all, these words will deconstruct the house of cards that rules our hearts, our minds, and our actions. If we are not challenged or changed by these words, we prove that the voice of truth has no jurisdiction within us. True freedom doesn't come from patriotism, but from the liberation from our dependence upon it. Now, do I have your attention? I know this triggers some of you. I have to go here. I have to pick this scab. I know it's tender. I know it creates a pressure inside. I have to go here or your soul will not wake up. Yes, I'm jarring you awake. Yes, pay attention, please, the words that are coming. I hope you will stop categorizing me, labeling me, dismissing me long enough to hear how I came to this conclusion. You see, these are the words I'm talking about, and they follow as this. You've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 through 42. Yeah, today we examine retaliation as part two of the triad that explains the beatitude in Matthew 5:8. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. You see, retaliation, oath-taking, and enemies all come together in a singular impulse, which is what we're talking about over the next week. Yeah, these are all three pieces of the same pie. And Jesus is reframing religion into something true and transformational. His words are as vital today as they were in the first century. They're also just as repulsive to religious, political, and military minds. See, if you find yourself pushing back or being offended by my words because of some loyalty to country, some loyalty to religion, or some loyalty to your military experience, then the soul is out of tune. What has happened is you have over-identified with these institutional powers. They have given you your identity, the fake ID, and now you think you are what they have given you. This is where the gospel is driving on the heart to redeem and claim your life back for a personal freedom. You see, the ethos of most countries is retaliation. It is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Just watch it on our evening news every single day. It's not just our countries, folks. Retaliation is the same in our political parties, right? Well, the Democrats just did that. Well, the Republicans just did that, so we're going to do it too. You know, it doesn't matter what subject you're talking about. Business competitors. Well, they got away with it, so we're going to get away with it. What about your college mascots? All of a sudden, the most similar person to you on the field is someone whom you want to destroy just because their jersey is another color. It's the same in high school when we're much more immature in our little cliques, the band geek and the jock. Certainly would have to retaliate, right? What about sibling rivalries, right? This is really just exposing how immature we are and how far we have not come in our own evolution. Our pride clutches firmly onto the impulse of eye for an eye. In fact, it was part of the religion of the day that Jesus said, yeah, you've heard people say. In fact, your religion teaches you eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But I'm coming and I'm saying to you, there's something more. There's something better than pre-rational humanity in what it's done for centuries. See, our own patriotism trickles this mantra into our being like an intravenous drip. The mindset is a malware script within the cardia, the very deep being, the mind of a person. See, it's a callus that feels really good inside. We love, we get chills, we weep at the star-spangled banner. See, it puffs us up with strength. It supercharges our ego with a sense of power. We love a good fight. We love a winner and a loser, especially if we are the winner. We have the power, the military power, right? War instead of a liberated heart, by all means. What would happen if we just surrendered? I know some of you hate me right now. I know that. I know that what I'm saying is really ticking some of you off. It's really pressing on that nerve. I'm doing that on purpose. I hope you know that. If I were a musician, I would be playing in notes that gripped your heart. But I'm trying to weave words into a way of accessing that part of your being that is dying. It's anesthetized. It's sleeping. It's just going along on the superhighway to destruction. What about surrender? What about surrendering that impulse to retaliate? You know, in the same way, avoiding an oath like we learned last week is surrendering the outcome. So surrendering the impulse to retaliate is really opening your hand to an outcome that you don't egotistically actually control. So how do your politics stack up next to Jesus' teaching? Sit with that one for just a minute. Yeah, are you for open borders? Or do you really want a big wall? What do you want? What's your view on, tariffs, on war, on military power, right? See, our judicial system has this ethos of lawyering up, where retaliation changes the fair verdict into an unfair appeal. Why? Because when you're a loser, fair isn't fair to the loser. So we just lawyer up again and go for an appeal and tie it up in court. True victims of justice and justice itself are actually buried in piles of frivolous lawsuits in our country, which plunder the resources of everybody. So what would happen if we just surrendered the need to retaliate? What if our impulse, what is our impulse if someone wants to sue us for the shirt off our back? What are you going to do? You going to double down? What kind of heart can surrender its need for justice? Think about this. This addiction is harder to master than any cigarette or booze or opioid. Think about this. This is an addiction to retaliation. Every one of us groans under the oppression and pain that this ethos of retaliation pushes upon us. Yet we can't fathom even momentarily what it would look like if we just gave it up. We just took no oath. Immediately we think, well, the bad guys are going to totally plunder us, right? If you don't defend yourself, the evil in the world is going to win. We cannot just sit idly by and let evil take over. We have to retaliate. We have to do something. It seems like justice is the most noble pursuit, and our sense of justice is always based in retribution. We don't understand anything other than retaliation. See, this sentiment resonates within our own win-lose mindset as the right thing to do. It's the, like I say, vestigial residue of a pre-rational consciousness. We assume that Jesus must be a total idiot here, or has no clue of what we're facing today, so therefore he couldn't have meant what he meant if he knew what we were dealing with today. Jesus must have been completely wrong. I mean, how can he possibly ask us to surrender our right, our need for retaliation? I mean, what about protecting all that we've labored for? What about justice? That's the question. Your justice button is being pushed. And I'm pushing it as hard as I can to wake you up, because this is the heart of the problem. Will it be retribution or restoration? You see, was Jesus just weak and clueless? You know, the conservative or the religious mind of Jesus' day hated this aspect of Jesus. And they retreated back from him into institutional power. The institution gave them an identity that was preferable to the identity of liberation that Jesus was offering. The kingdoms of the world looked way better than what Jesus was trying to usher in. He wasn't ushering in retribution, eye for an eye. He was ushering in a new kind of justice, one based on love and restoration. Consider the words that he said when he said he says later in Matthew, he says, do not resist the one who is evil. If someone would insult you, let him do it. This is all coming from this teaching today. This is what he's saying. Think how counterintuitive this is. Don't resist the one who is evil? What American was like that? No, I have a Second Amendment right. I carry 7 guns on myself so that I can kill the person who's evil. If someone would insult you, let them. No, you don't let that ride. You take them head on in the Twitter sphere. If someone would sue the shirt off your back, give them your coat. That's not what we do. If someone wants to sue us, we lawyer up. We take them on. We engage. And if the military asks you to carry a load or to do something for you, he's saying go twice as far. Give twice as much. How many of you would do this if it was talking about taxes? If the government asked you for 10% or 30% tax, give them twice as much. What about the beggar? What about giving to the beggar? How many times has our own framework inside our mind reframed the life of the beggar to such a way that we can now just look over them and say, well, there's groups that'll take care of them. I don't have to do anything. What about the one who would borrow from you? Well, borrowing is something they should just go to a bank for. We just defer it to the institutional power that does it. Now no longer are we responsible for our brother. We don't even see them as our brother. They see them as the institution's problem. Folks, this is really real, isn't it? These words feel incredulous to the modern mind. I mean, Jesus' teachings do not set our immigration policies here, do they? I mean, can you imagine Jesus being a guest on Fox News and talking about this? Just resist the one who's evil. They'd be like, what are you talking about, Jesus? Would Jesus want a giant wall? Would Jesus be for open borders? Would Jesus lawyer up or grow the military? See, no wonder church and state hung Jesus on a cross. We would absolutely do it all over again if he were here today. Kris Kristofferson was right. See, I know some of you are getting riled up by my words, and I hope that you know that unlike most pastors and political people, I don't fear losing my base. This is why I can talk to you this way. I'm free to tell you the truth, because if you unsubscribe, you cost me nothing. I don't lose my financial well-being. My church doors don't close. My ego project doesn't go away. More people have unsubscribed to this podcast than have subscribed. But there's a reason for that. They don't like the feeling that they're having right now. They don't like being challenged with the truth. Right? I don't fear losing my base. I'm free to tell you the truth, and I do it because I love you. I do it because I actually care. The mind that is over-identified with any institution will hate the kingdom and flow of God. If you over-identify with family, with church, with your religion, with your government, with your military, with your sports, with your academics, with your business, with your economics, any institution, if you over-identify with it, you will hate the kingdom and flow of God. We just simply can't believe it. See, Jesus is ushering subversion through love, not an overpowering through hate. Service, not dominance. The kingdom Jesus offers is based on an entirely different ethos than the kingdoms and institutions that we have sworn allegiance to. So, as we'll see next week, the command is to love our enemy. Not destroy them, not ruin them, not eradicate them, nor separate ourselves from them. It's to love them. So, if you sense some anger, if you feel frustration, some sense of offense, if you're offended or dismayed at this teaching, then you, like all of us, have a cardia, a mindset that has not yet been transformed completely by love. And we're all in this together. Love is always working on the heart. It's always working to transform and change us. Yet we're so resistant to it. This is what it means to be unregenerate. This is what it means to have unsaved portions of your life. This is what's most alarming, is that it's the religious mind. It's the political mind. It's the military mind, the cardia, that is the most unregenerate of them all. We can lay claim to all kinds of religious beliefs. We can swear allegiance to a religion or God or even Jesus. We can do all these things our religious or patriotic tribe asks us to do. But if we don't have love for the other person, if our justice is not restorative, if it's still retributive, then we are nothing. Paul calls us in 1 Corinthians 13 a big zero. In Matthew 7:21 is this really sobering reality that people have all this allegiance to religion and religious practice, and God just says, I don't even know you. Why? Because it's coming out of a false identity. They've over-identified with all this stuff. They've taken the fake ID, and perfect truth can know nothing of falseness. So the false self is the only thing God knows nothing about. So when it comes to God, inner transformation is really the name of the game, right? I mean, it's all about impulse rewiring. We either change from the inside out or we live a lie, a false life, dying from the inside out. So now you're faced with the same choice as I was. We can either double down on your position and find others in the institution that are going to justify the hatred and prejudice that resides within your heart. Or you can open your hand. You can surrender the outcomes from a pure heart. You can catch the impulse to retaliate and then go a different way. See, this allows us to live in freedom. Or we can just dig in our heels deeper into our pride and fight from the impulse prison, this captivity, this living hell of fear and certainty, which makes up our patriotism. See, following Jesus' teaching does not require an oath. It doesn't require a religion. You don't have to convert to something. It requires us to break with the oath that presently owns you, controls you, dominates your cardia. So we can all walk right out of this three-sided prison right now. All you have to do is catch the impulse to retaliate and go a different way. See, institutional allegiance or restoration through love. It's your choice, just like it's mine. How do you think I got to this place? I mean, I had to lay down my position of power. Can you do it? Can you surrender your need to resist the evil one? Or would you rather just double down and be twice the evil that they are? Consider the words of Jesus when he said to them in Matthew 23, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees." Of course, he's talking to the religious mind. He says, "You're hypocrites. You travel across the sea and land to make a single proselyte. And when he becomes a proselyte, a convert, you make him twice as much a child of hell as yourself." See, the people who claim to know Jesus, these are the ones that seem to be out front in our political landscape. They seem to be out front talking the most about all of our policy and how we should treat people, our anthropology. The people who subscribe to the idea that Jesus is God should be the ones who most embrace his teaching. Yet in Jesus' day, he contended most with the religious Jews who claimed to know God yet lived very contrary to his nature and his ethos. So Jesus reframed the law to bring true meaning to retaliation so that our hearts might be transformed by the power of love and in the process realize that God is visible in the other person. That thing we fear and want to diminish and destroy and cast out and remove and clear away from ourselves is actually God. The clear message is, if we have the eyes to see it, is that Jesus is asking us to treat others as God has already treated us. If love doesn't change our politics or our beliefs, we are no closer to God than the religious mind of Jesus' day, and he had very little good to say about them. To be pure in heart, which is this is all about, to access the cardia, which is the mindset, not the emotion like we think of it today, the heart. The impulse to retaliate, that's it. That's the essence of this teaching. And it's the essence of all true spirituality, accessing the impulse within. If love can't transform or save our heart in our politics, our anthropology, in how we treat others, then our religion will have no power to save us on the day we die. Don't you see that? If you can be unloving towards another, the love of God hasn't transformed your life. How could you possibly say you're saved just because you subscribe to some liturgy or some ethos of a religious tradition? That doesn't make you saved. God is judging the heart. And the heart is proved by how you treat others. This is the whole golden rule. So Jesus picks the ultimate scab, revealing that if we've believed a lie all this time, it's been a big lie. Institutional religious power has been lying to you. Politics has been lying to you. Wake up. It's okay to be an American or from any other country. It's okay to appreciate and enjoy and cherish your culture, your upbringing, where you're from. These are not wrong. What's wrong is over-identifying with it to the point that you diminish anybody else's upbringing, country, or experience. It's okay to like where you're from, the fatal flaws, letting it define who you are and then diminishing others who are different as the enemy. And we're going to talk a lot more about that next week. So, isn't it time we get real? Isn't it time we really examine the impulses we have to retaliate? Can we grow up enough to trust the process of surrendering our outcomes to love? Isn't that the very essence of faith? See, if you love your life at all, if you love this country at all, please let retaliation go from your heart. The ethos of God is restoration, not retaliation.